Why can't?
That was just a great moment.
I know.
Hang on. Let's count the producers we've had on this program. There's Elena. There was Josh. Right? Mm-hmm. There was Matt.
Matty Brown.
We only had three? Yeah, Matty Brown and then Sam.
Yes.
At no point in the history of this five-year podcast has anyone messed up counting backwards from five.
Yeah.
Until today.
Five, now, the thing I wanted to talk about, though, is that...
Three. Oh, wait.
Three. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I messed it up. How do you mess up counting backwards from five?
It happens, man. Listen, if you have things in both your hands and you're wearing shoes, it's very hard.
It's very hard
to count that down. I wanted to talk about what your discussion with Sam before the show, in which you were giving him a number, and instead of giving him the numbers, you used jersey numbers. And I wanted to give you a hug because I do that all the time. I do that all
do
the
you?
Time to swap.
Okay.
Out.
Do you do that? Okay. Do you do that to annoy people, or do you do that as a secret hockey handshake?
I do it as a secret hockey handshake, but I also do it mentally. Like when I go, because as you know, I am not really the most dependable and rememberful guy to the point where I make up words like rememberful. But when I go to the barber, for example, I can never remember what like number clipper I want to use in the side of my head. And there have been times when I've walked out of the barber looking like I was about to go to West Point because I forget the number of the clipper. But I always remember now that when I go to the barber, in my brain, I'm like, I'm going to get the Danico. I'm going to get the three. I want the three. The Danico.
That's how I remember. That's awesome. So if you're like a Colorado fan and the last four digits of their phone number are like 2934, do you call it the McKinnon Soderberg?
As you should.
Blah, 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 McKinnon Soderberg.
I like it because it's like military, you know, letters speak like Tango Delta. Instead, for hockey fans, it's sort of like, reach me at 555 Iserman Gonchar. You know, it's like
this is what high level security companies should use as far as phone number encryption. Just start using hockey players' names instead of encrypting the actual numbers themselves. No need to go through that extra step. Just use hockey players' names. That's all.
People don't know that Edward Snowden was actually just a huge hockey fan and was able to crack a multitude of codes and take information with him.
Oh, Tavares Okposo, 9121. He means 9121.
But I'm sure we're not alone in people doing that, either to remember things, but also to reach out to fellow puckheads and secret handshake code. But you know what's good? We've talked about this on the show before too, though. Like, it's one of those things that I do, but I also hesitate because as hockey fans, especially here in the U.S., we circle each other like wolves for a little bit before we are willing to engage each other on how deep down the rabbit hole. Yeah, we have
you
to.
You totally test. You're like, it's like a mating ritual that American hockey fans go through when they meet another hockey fan. Where you sort of, you know, bump up a little bit. Okay, let's see how deep your knowledge is. How deep is your love? How deep is your love? And then you kind of figure out, okay, what's the level at which we can have a conversation?
Right.
We do.
And we just assume all Canadians are, formed inside of a matrix birthing pod, and you're all plugged into the same thing, and you all come out of the womb fully formed knowing the exact point total of Bobby Orr's career. Like, we all assume all know this.
What year was Vivian born?
Vivian was born 5 years ago. I'm terrible at math. I'm just
kidding. 2010. She was born in 2010. So do you refer to your daughter? So when people ask how old your daughter is, you say, I have a 2010. Or I have a 2010. Like you talk to them as far as like draft years. Like this year it's the 98s, right? Last year was the 97s.
No. I do the opposite. I have a Lidstrom Gerby. I have a 5.5.
I always said that I wasn't going to be that parent until I really got into, well, I know it's so bad. I get the rank, like all the parents, and I catch myself doing it. I'm like, oh God, don't be a jerk. Stop that. Stop referring to them in their draft year.
The circling fans thing is a problem. I mean, it's always been a problem and I wish we didn't do it. But it's a problem because the assumption is always, oh, well, you are probably a bandwagoner based on the style and cleanliness of your hat or your jersey. And then there's different bandwagon thing for local fan base. There's the how well do you know the league and its history for, like, national conversations. And then, of course, the most deplorable one, of course, is any time a male fan meets a woman fan, and the default assumption for many of them is that you don't even know what sport you're watching, which is the most deplorable thing. But it's like it's that sort of, like, closed tent mentality that American hockey fans in some ways have. But then once it's established that the person you're talking to knows the difference between a stick and a bat and at least can go back, you know, several years in the franchise's history, then I think everybody's best friends. But it's that very awkward sort of like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, saw the game last night? Yeah, great. Huh? Yeah. All right, he broke Sean Burke's record. Does he know who Sean Burke is? You know,
wow. One of those things. Wow. I don't want to sound condescending. Oh, do you know what condescending means? Yes, thank you. That was part of an actual conversation I overheard in a bar once when a guy was talking
really?
To a girl and said, yeah, it was the most, and he was hammered too. And it was the most unintended insult I've ever heard in my life. Oh, listen, I don't want to sound condescending here, but well, actually, do you know what condescending means?
I thought, wow, that may be the means.
It's maybe the most perfect line I've ever heard in a bar in my life.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you ever meet a Canadian fan and you're like a little wary about how hockey smart they are, or no?
No, because I've told you before. Like, man, you just went robot. Wish, did Wish just evaporate as well?
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Okay, wow, you just like went robo Wish. That's crazy.
Wow.
Dick Jones. It was Dick Jones. That's what I thought you were going to say next. No, because I can't speak to other Canadians, but every hockey conversation usually that I'm in, I go on a fishing trip. Like I've told you, I try to find out what you know. So I don't do the, okay, how deep can we get here? My whole thing is always, okay, what do you know that I don't know? Let's find that out. So maybe I come at it from a different editorial perspective.
I'm still stuck on the fact that, like, you know Jack and Dick about most sci-fi movies, but RoboCop's your wheelhouse. I don't know how that happened.
Oh God, man, I loved RoboCop. Honestly, there's few things that I enjoyed more, and even to this day, than watching the original RoboCop. Oh, it's so good.
So you probably like sci-fi with a little bit of societal satire mixed in, that kind of thing.
Like I grew up on. I grew up, listen, here's where I grew up for sci-fi. I grew up on Omega Man and Soylent Green, okay? That's the kind of sci-fi that I dig with a sort of, you're right, like with a socio-political slant or a socio-political point. Now, I've sort of gotten to the point now, and this is where sort of Matrix lost me a little bit, where I can do without the, oh, it's a cautionary tale of the times. Like, I can do without that. I'd rather sort of embrace what this thing is that we're all part of right now. I can do without the, oh, we better be careful because we're going down a certain path that's going to lead to blah, 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 blah. I can do without that stuff. But, hey, as a kid, man, those Heston movies, I was all about all of them.
I was going to say, the common denominator.
Is people.
Well, first of all, spoiler warning. Second of all, I was noticing the common denominator was sort of a post-peak sexuality Charlton Heston be the common denominator. And not like Planet of the Apes where he's like shirtless and all hot and stuff, but, you know.
Now that he can't screw anymore, the world is doomed in his mind.
It's made of people. That's people. Yeah. Well, as you know, all are welcome here on this show, as we know that all are well, we're welcome at our big live show last week. We have not done a podcast since then. Give us for a moment, for the people that weren't there and the people that were there, your quick summation of what was, I believe, an amazing event in person and an event that translated poorly on the podcast because it sounded like people literally sitting between us were in the back of the room.
Yeah, I haven't gone back and listened to it because I got your cautionary tale about it. It's so funny, the next morning, eh? So I wake up and I check my iPhone. There's a message from Wish. You might not want to listen to the podcast yesterday.
Well, the difference is Merrick is a professional broadcaster. And God bless him for this, has very high standards for how the show should listen to. No, you do. You want the show to sound good and you want things to be handled professionally. And I think that's great. I think it's great for the podcast. I go and interview people on my iPhone and I'm like, oh, well, it recorded and you at least want it to sound good. And I think that's great. And so when things go awry and you're not aware of it in the moment and I listen back to it and I'm just like, You know, like Andy Petrella was like literally like in the middle of it. It's like penalty box close when there's like more than one person in the penalty box. And it sounded like she was somewhere in Stouffville doing
that. That's too bad, man. Hey, back off, man. Man, it's a little bit close, man. Back off. Close talker. Hey, that's too bad because we had a good little rip fest on the iDesk too. That's really too bad that Andy's didn't pick up because we had a good time whacking that pinata around a little bit. Listen, man, I always have fun at these things. Like, these things make all of this goofiness that we do here on a regular / semi-regular basis all worthwhile. Like, that's always the payoff for me. The payoff for me is always I get to meet a bunch of new people, and generally they're all really awesome. Like, I sat down for like 15 minutes and talked to someone who works at Sick Kids Hospital, like saving children's lives. Who listens to our podcast.
Yeah.
Like, hang on. Right. What? Really? Like, this silly goofiness that we do? Like, you say, like, you do something. Like, at the end of the day, I go to bed and my wife says, like, what do you really do? Like, what really, what's your job? And all I can come back to is, well, I talk about things that other people did. And then I talk to this gentleman. I'm like, holy smokes, you actually do something. Anyway. And you meet wonderful people and you always, it's always interesting to me that anyone actually listens. So remember when we started this thing?
The cross section of people that listen.
Huge.
Yeah.
But when we first started, I think both of us kind of said, well, I give it 2 weeks. Maybe if we're lucky, we can string it out to 2 months. And here we are 5 years later. And now we're in a place where it feels like, I don't know what it feels like to you, we can go to pretty much any NHL city and a lot of junior hockey cities as well and just kind of know people through the podcast.
Yeah. And do what we did in Toronto. Like, we're going to Buffalo. Like, you're going to be there for the draft.
We are going to
do a live show in Buffalo at some point by hook or by crook. We'll do one and have an event there. Because these are super fun. My three takeaways. First of all, thank you for everybody who came to the show, who bought tickets to the show, participated in the show, who bought a book at the show.
That brings me to number two.
I'm all new to this whole book sign-in business. I only did a couple of my first books, so this is all new to me, but. The fact that people were coming up to meet us after the show and having me sign my own book and you sign my book. And the fact of the matter is, I saw some of these autographs, basically what Merrick would do is go to the first page where my name is mentioned. And he would write things like, I can't believe you're going to read a book by this hack, and then draw a giant cartoon arrow from the word hack to my name inside my own book.
Yeah, I think the other one was you didn't actually pay money for this, did you? Oh yeah, I had a great time ripping on your book in the front page section. That was great. That was a great time.
And then the other thing is, and I know that people really care about this, so I'm going to mention it. We did another live game show. I will say overall, I think it went better than the previous one that we did, which was an absolute train wreck in the sense that no one could name anyone who had ever won the Calder Trophy before. We did it this time with Steve Dangle and do you remember the cat's name that did the game with him?
I don't know, but he was awesome because he made Jason Blake a folk hero on the podcast.
Yeah, that's the thing that happened was that we did two different Leafs teams, and in both cases he went out mentioning Jason Blake's name. Jason Blake, not a member of either team.
That's awesome.
And this is
great.
Problematic for two reasons. The first is that we had other names like Sundin still on the ledger, Cabrera still on the ledger in some cases that you knew were there. And he said Jason Blake both times. And that's the other problem. Once you go out on Jason Blake should not be anywhere in your wheelhouse, should not be an arrow in your quiver for any other part of this game. Because maybe you just don't know when Jason Blake played in Toronto. Like, that's possible, right?
No, but you know what it would be like? It would be like watching Jeopardy and always giving the same answer. Just because eventually it's going to be right. Like, who did that? On the, it's true. Where did I see that? On the Ricky Gervais podcast, cartoony, showy.
I'll tell you one thing, but to speak to that idea, I used to do that when I was a kid and the category would be U.S. presidents. I would just answer, like, when I would be, like, watching it with my dad, I'd just answer Taft for each one. Because William Howard Taft was my favorite president as a kid because he was, like, twice the size of Chris Christie and yet he got elected, which is amazing to me. Like,
you know,
there was an era in which a morbidly obese fat man could get elected president.
Carl Pilkington, that's it, on the Ricky Gervais show. Carl Pilkington watching Jeopardy and just answering egg I think it was egg to every question because eventually egg was going to be the answer. That's the whole time I was thinking. They're like, just keep saying Jason Blake, bud. It's going to be right eventually. You know, Andy Warhol always said, if you stand in the same place your entire life, you'll meet everyone in the world. And that's kind of what I thought was going to happen. Just keep saying Jason Blake. Please, please, just keep saying Jason Blake. Eventually it's going to be right. And man, if you did give a question, the answer was Jason Blake, that place would have come unglued last week, Wish, mm-hmm. if Jason Blake was actually the answer. Nah, it's a million to one long shot, but still.
Would have popped big. All right, a couple things, hockey things now, as we push on into the show. Well, actually, do you want to do an intro? We should probably do an intro. Do you think Sam?
Haven't done it. Yeah, I don't know.
Sam might have one queued up.
Yeah, I bet he does.
This is where Sam starts. This is where they start playing the Benny Hill music, and he starts rushing around the studio. I always assume that because I've been in that studio, that they use carts still. Like, it's not digital. They have to go and find
the cart. No. They still don't use, and carts, for those that don't know, are sort of the radio equivalent of the 8-track. And right. you sort of pop it into the machine, and then it plays whatever audio is on there. But no,
I
no,
use
no.
carts they, when I
it's
when
all
I
digital now.
In, yeah, I did radio in college with my good friend Kevin Kozel, and we used to do radio on the AM station at Maryland. I don't know if I ever talked about this. We used to do radio at the AM station at Maryland at midnight on Saturday nights. It was the only slot we could get, and we would do like 2 hours of like indie music. And the carts that we would play, because we didn't really have to do commercials per se, were like PSAs for don't cross the street in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle of the block.
Oh,
and it was the greatest shit ever. And then we would go out drinking afterwards. And the funny thing about that radio station, because Maryland had two, they had an FM station that was legit and like the big college indie rock station in the DC area was that Maryland station. And then they had this AM station, and the AM station was literally only available over your dial-up internet, so you couldn't even listen to it,
Ooh.
Or inside buildings on campus, which was amazing because we used to do the show Saturday night at midnight when every building on campus was locked. So I'm not even sure who the hell listened to it, but we had a really good time. But yeah, we used carts.
You know what?
Ladies and gentlemen, please.
Oh, I was going to say, I think we've tap danced enough here at Fred Astaire for Sam to actually line one up. I think we should very be good too. By the way, Karen Douglas just tweeted out the autograph that you gave her on your book, which is outstanding. Every time you agree with Jeff, I die a little inside. That's not a very nice wish. It's not
I try to. Everybody should know this. If I'm going to sign your book, I personalize it for you. I ask some questions to try to get to know you. I simply don't. If I write thanks for reading, it's probably because I don't like you in real life. If I just write that.
Best wishes, yours in sports, Greg.
Right. Keep in touch, KIT. All right, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Ooh, zap. Thanks. America Sports. Hey, where'd that go?
I'm going to take a pie in the face, sir. Now let me through.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a tax write-off. You get to throw a pie in my face and write it off for taxes.
Debate hockey. Pop culture. And more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
From July 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2014, Gary Bettman made roughly $9.6 million in salary and benefits from July 1 through June 30th, a one-year period. $9.6 million.
If you're an owner in the NHL, you say to yourself, "We got him at a bargain."
Yeah,
Sting. It's gonna sting some hockey players. Hey, how come he's? Well, sorry. Like, look what he works for the owners. Man, if you had an employee that worked like that and got those results and grew your business the way that Gary Bettman has, going back to 1993, $9 million. That's it.
I'm actually surprised, to be honest with you. Like, I just assumed it would be more. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry now for this this league, and he's pulling in $9.6 million, which is pretty crazy.
If I were him, I'd go on strike.
Hold out for more money?
Just hold out. Just be a training camp no-show.
$9.6 million, that means he makes more. If he made that much this season, he'd make more than every player in base salary, I think, than Taves and Kane.
Yeah.
I'm the general manager.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. That's cap hit. Here we go. This is he would make less than Weber, Taves, Kane, Crosby, Ovi, Kessel, Lundqvist, and then that's it. He would make more than Malkin, Staal, Getzlaf, Giroux, and Suter, and Parise. Holy cow! Look how many people make. Look how many players make more than $9 million base salary. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 15 players make more than $9 million base salary.
How many? We lost half a season. I know. Half a season, yeah. Before that, an entire season. But that was all about getting rid of Bob Goodenow and getting the salary cap. Pick that up in a second. We'll talk about bad contracts in a minute. Joining us now as podcasts collide, he is the host of the PDO cast, which is fantastic. His name is Dmitry Filipovich. We all know him from that podcast and elsewhere at Dim Filipovich on Twitter. How are you doing today, Dmitry? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Mr. Filipovich. Now, I want to jump right in, and I'm going to really try. We've had a bunch of tweets about this, so I am going to try to stay away from the Colorado Avalanche with you. Because I know that...
that's good. Me and Travis pretty much talk about it on every one of our shows, so I think it's good for our listeners.
I was going to say, I won't bore you anymore because I'm sure you're done with that pinata. But I was listening to SiriusXM NHL Network Radio on the weekend, and Andrew Berkshire from SportLogic was making the point that the New York Rangers, as good as their record is, in a lot of ways is a deeply flawed team. Agree or disagree, Dmitry Filipovich?
I don't know if I'd use the word deeply. They definitely have some issues. A lot of it's been masked by some shooting luck and Henrik Lundqvist being the best goalie in the world. And that's probably going to continue to some degree. But I think, like, the red flags are that Dan Girardi, for example, is pretty much a complete abomination at this point. But because of his contract, they kind of feel obligated to strap him to Ryan McDonagh and drag him down as well. So the team would look a lot different if they kind of just rid themselves of that and put him in the third pairing and freed up McDonagh. So I think he's a pretty smart coach. And I think that as the season goes along, he might make that adjustment and that'll help him a lot.
He's a really smart coach. I've covered the Rangers the last 2 years since living here in New York, and you know, it's amazing to me how structured and disciplined that team is insofar as their ability to counterpunch and transition to offense. I've seen games in which they've looked very sort of if not on the ropes, at least a little bit controlled offensively, and then just one mistake and boom, the other way, and they make you pay for it, and then Henrik carries them the rest of the way.
Right, yeah. No, I think he's a really smart tactical coach, and he did a great job here in Vancouver and kind of got a bad rap just because they struggled to win that big one in the playoffs. But he also gets kind of a rap for kind of having his teams turtle up late in games when they have the lead. But the fact of the matter is that, like, pretty much every single coach does that, and people just sort of pick on him for some reason, so I don't know why that is. But, yeah, no, he's a great coach.
I saw you mention a team that I'm sorry about that.
Let me just make a quick point about Vigneault as well, if I can jump in. Make it both your thoughts on this one. I still can't figure out, as coaching positions, assistant coaching positions for this World Cup of Hockey are being handed out everywhere, where's the love for Alain Vigneault in all this? Why nothing? I can't figure this one out.
Yeah, I don't know. He definitely deserves to be up there with the top coaches in the league and doesn't really seem to get the credit for it. So I don't know. He's been doing such a good job for such a long time, and I guess people are taking it for granted or something, and he's flying under the radar a bit, but he's definitely one of the top four or five coaches in the league, I'd say.
You mentioned the other day in their game against the Minnesota Wild, the Carolina Hurricanes, and they're a tough team for me to figure because I think there's something really impressive there, but I can't figure out why it doesn't show up game to game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's sort of like a general lack of talent. They have some skilled guys up front, but it's sort of like the Leafs issue where I think they're getting a really good coaching job, and structurally and tactically they're kind of excelling in the possession game because of it at 5-on-5, but they can't seem to kind of convert those chances that the really good teams do, and the goaltending has been such a big issue that from night to night you don't know what you're going to get, and it's kind of led to uneven results for them, I think.
And conversely, can you tell me why the Devils are doing what they're doing? Because I'm I'm really surprised right now.
I honestly have no idea. I've been if you you would have told me before the season that I'd have spent this much time talking about the Devils a month into the year, I would have thought you're crazy. But I keep kind of mentioning them on Twitter to people because they have all these surprising results, and guys like Lee Stepniak and Kyle Palmieri are scoring a nearly a point a game. And I don't know, it makes no sense. I just recently actually kind of watched the game from Saturday against the Penguins up close, and yeah, they kind of took it to them. They speedbagged them a little bit there, and the Penguins were playing in the third game in four nights, so you got to take that into account. But you know, it's impressive. It's impressive what they're doing. They play with a lot of speed, and they don't have too many wasted roster spots on that team. I mean, aside from guys like Tutu and Farnham, but otherwise, they're just like a solid hockey team, and you know, the bottom might fall out eventually, but for now it's been pretty surprising.
Yeah, for now it's a fun ride. It's funny, I was going to kick off the podcast by saying, Greg, is it okay for me to, am I allowed to enjoy New Jersey Devils hockey games? Because honestly, when I flip them on, I really kind of do enjoy. I mean, how much do we look at the Devils? And well, quick point here. How much do we look at the Devils and say, okay, what Shiro did in this offseason was he went specifically and picked up offensively minded players. Now, it's not high-end guys. It's, you know, Stempniak and Palmieri and Schlemko and more. But these are all guys that want to play an up-tempo, offensive style of game, and then brought in a coach that knows how to coach that in John Hines.
Well, I think the key is that, you know, I don't know if those guys are necessarily all offensively minded, but they can all skate. And in today's NHL, I think that's massive. So I really like what they did in that regard this summer.
Yeah, and it's a super aggressive forecheck. And to answer your question, Merrick, I'm completely okay with the Devils playing this well because I'm going to just assume that Austin Matthews is injury prone. So, you know, we'll play really well and we'll avoid, you know, the Rick DiPietro forwards and then go, you know, go from there. So.
Hey, well, Greg, do you think the Devils are kind of in the heads of the Blackhawks for their inevitable Stanley Cup final matchup this summer?
Oh, I think so, definitely. And as you know, I mean, the Devils have a grand tradition of bucking any analytic logic to make a run to the Cup like they did in 2012. So, no, like Merrick said, like, it's actually a fun team to watch, and Hines has that sort of aggressive forechecking. You know, it's funny, like, when I watch the Devils, and I've only seen them a couple times because I actively avoided them for the first at least 2 weeks or 3 weeks of the season. When I watch them now, it reminds me of talking to Lightning players about the way Cooper played or had them playing. I think there's a palpable joy that players have in not having to sit back, in being allowed to be aggressive on the puck in all ends of the ice. And I don't know what the secret formula is for the Devils for their offense, but after talking to those Lightning players, it's always stuck to me that if you play a style in which the players really enjoy playing it, sometimes that can translate into very special things on the ice. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I'm responsible for this as well, but analytics guys kind of try to quantify this stuff and make sense of it right off the bat. And the fact of the matter is that the Devils are kind of one of the NHL's low-key fun storylines, and whether it continues or not is a whole other story. But for now, it's kind of fun to follow and enjoy. Right?
Because I look at the Penguins, and I think they're all effing they're miserable. They don't want to play that style of hockey. They hate it. They absolutely hate it. And even Malkin, when in his comments over the weekend about, you know, being mad at each other offensively, you could just hear it in his voice that he's like, well, you know, when the system works, it works. But they don't believe that. They don't believe that the system does work, and they hate the system, and they're tired of playing it.
Right. Well, they don't have any defensemen, really, besides, like, Letang and Matta on occasion, who can actually get them the puck. And it would make sense they'd be frustrated, considering they have to keep starting from their own end of the ice and trying to make everything happen themselves. And it kind of – I know Derek Pouliot had a little run-in with the Lollies recently, but I think he should be up pretty soon because he'd jump in as probably their second or third most talented defenseman, and it makes no sense that they're kind of keeping him in the AHL while the rest of the team is struggling here.
That's a tough one, because I think the Penguins in their mind had that this guy was starting on the defense and he was going to make the team out of training camp, but it didn't happen. You mentioned fun a couple of seconds ago, Dimitri, and I've talked about this on this podcast countless times. The most fun I have watching hockey this year involves the Dallas Stars.
Right.
And I threw something out there on, what was it, Saturday night, maybe Friday night? But Saturday night, it's just like how much I love watching John Klingberg. You know, OT winner, in tight, pops a water bottle. It's a great moment. I don't know if there's anyone that I've seen walk the line like Nick Lidstrom since he retired, but John Klingberg seems to be that guy. Travis, your co-host, Travis Yost, jumped up and said, yeah, he's one of my top three players to watch. And then my good buddy, who we all know, Stephen Birch, who quickly came in to correct us analytically to say that he's not
fun, right?
But yeah, I know.
Well, I've talked about people. People have asked me about Birch. I'm like, Do you remember the times when everybody would get really mad at Dello about being so persnickety and convinced that his kung fu is the best? Well, imagine that, but with less personality.
I love Birch. I think Birch is, honestly, you don't know him then, because dude's actually pretty funny.
No, I love Birch too, because someone has to be the ombudsman, and I think he's filled that role that Dello used to do on an hourly basis really, really well.
And Birch is now the guy. I was mentioning this on Dimitri's podcast when I was on a couple weeks ago. Was that, you know, he's one of the guys when I do show prep, like when I prep for a game, he's one of the guys. He's one of my first phone calls. And we sort of run down the roster and go through it that way. But right away, you know, he said, you know, it might be a lot of fun, but I wouldn't put him in the Carlson and PK Subban category yet. He's a lot lower down the totem pole. Dimitri, where are you at with John Klingberg?
I think he's right up there. I mean, it's kind of a fair point to say, you know, let's let a little sample size build here because he hasn't been doing it for as long as some of those other guys. But yeah, no, the spatial awareness he has is just remarkable. And obviously, he came up as a forward, and I think that kind of helps him in this regard because, he does everything well with the puck. I really don't see any flaw in his game. The one question I had was like a little bit about his shot, but this year he's done such a phenomenal job of kind of being patient and waiting for shooting lanes to open up. And then, of course, the goal against the Wild in the 3-on-3 overtime where he's up close and he just kind of roofs it is, I don't know how many defensemen in the league can even do that to begin with. So, yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch.
Look, I'm going to go there because I'm fascinated by it. Is there a day that goes by that you're not completely flabbergasted that Patrick Roy has a job?
We said no Colorado.
I don't care. Right. I need to know.
Well, so I had a lot of fans kind of tweet at me and say that there's no way the Avs are going to fire him until that outdoor game happens, right? So I kind of think that that's going to be the date to circle on the calendar. They're going to trot him out there for that, and then after that, all bets are off. But yeah, no, I think that Travis and I have argued about this a lot on our podcast, and the talent definitely isn't there on the back end, and that doesn't help them at all. But I just don't think Patrick Roy is a very good coach. Like, he doesn't – I don't know what they do during their practices or video sessions or whatnot, but definitely not, like, defensive zone coverage because they're just all over the place. And lack of talent is one thing, but it just, like, not really caring about your assignments and kind of skating around all willy-nilly is a whole nother thing. And they look brutal against the Habs, and I was kind of making fun of them and tweeting out some screenshots of blown coverage in their own zone, and then a lot of Habs fans were just retweeting with tweeting back at me saying, "Look at the scoreboard and 6-1 and all that stuff," and that's fine, but I don't think it's a recipe for success moving forward by any means.
You know, the one thing, Dimitri, as you all know, that Patrick Roy did when he first took over the Avalanche was something he brought in from the Quebec Ramparts of the QMJHL. You see it a lot in junior, not so much at the NHL level. It only kind of worked for half a season, and then after that, a lot of question marks started to pop up in Colorado, and that was playing man-to-man in the defensive zone. Like, it's a total junior hockey move. Actually, we see it in 3-on-3 now, and that, I'm sure, will change within a couple of months here. But, you know, outside of, you know, playing man-to-man, which he did with the Ramparts for a number of years to quite a lot of success, and that's a junior hockey way to play. I'm with you. I'm not seeing it. I can't, and I know they've lost the two centermen, Stastny and O'Reilly, and I get that, and the O'Reilly trade was a disaster. You have a player who's, you know, playing in the American Hockey League who can't make his way up, but I know they've lost the two centermen, but this should be a better team than they are right now based on who they have on paper.
Right. Well, okay, let me ask you guys. Do you guys think they're going to add another sentiment to that list of guys they've lost and Duchesne?
It would be the dumbest mistake that they've – listen, like I wrote over the weekend, the O'Reilly thing happened because he hated management and that was never going to work out, right?
Right.
And then the Stastny thing happened because they were actually smart and said signing a guy to that money based on our own current depth chart would be idiotic. The Duchesne thing would literally be like them pointing a cannon at their own feet and shooting off their toes. Like, it would be the dumbest thing they could do.
You know what I thought that was? You know what I thought that was? I talked to someone in Colorado last week when the rumors popped up. I think that was perhaps nothing more than Joe Sakic trying to spark his team a little bit.
No, I thought the same thing, but that would... The only thing I could think of is that Dater heard something or decided to throw it a theory, and then Sakic decided to play along. I don't think they leaked it to Dater because he was the one who kind of led the charge on that. But I wonder if they saw it and said, why don't we run with this and then talk to the usual Canadian proxies and McKenzie and LeBrun and Drager and get it out there in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. I don't think he was being actively shopped, but I think once it was out there, they got calls, especially from Ottawa.
Right. Well, I think 29 other teams should probably call him if he's available.
He's
pretty fantastic. And I don't know. Yeah, there was kind of a report out there that Patrick Waugh wasn't a big fan of him. And the one thing I'm kind of unclear about, and, you know, knowing this for certain would kind of help evaluate the Patrick Waugh tenure in Colorado, but it's like, how much of a say does he have in player personnel? Because if he does, then that would kind of even add on to the miserable job he's done so far. I don't know how much of it is Sakic and how much of it is Waugh,
That all said, man, and it ain't going to happen because I don't think Duchesne's going anywhere. But, I mean, you talk about matches made in heaven between Nashville and Colorado as far as needs and wants and what they both have on rosters. God, that would have been a beautiful negotiation to see them and the Avalanche get together about how to get Duchesne to Nashville and what defenseman goes back the other way. That's like a perfect fit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think Nashville is the one team that kind of keeps circling back to is going to make a splash sometime before the deadline. I'm kind of wondering whether it's going to be a rental or whether they're scarred off from what happened last year with Franzen and Santarelli, and whether they're going to go for a guy who's already locked up. And Duchesne will be kind of like a perfect building block to add to the Forsberg types there.
You know what? That's funny. I was talking to someone in the NHL about this 2 weeks ago, who brought up a really good point about the Colorado Avalanche, and it's not going to happen while Patrick Waugh's there, and we've all heard the comments already. But when you look at the Colorado Avalanche, considering they're never going to be a cap team, they're always going to be a budget team, you know, they've accrued a number of prospects and high draft picks, and that seems the way they're going to be going by way of trade as well, see Ryan O'Reilly deal. Why would you not try to turn yourselves into the Oakland A's and just go all in on analytics? 100%. Like, of all the teams in the NHL, couldn't you not make the argument that the Avs need to be the A's and go all in on this stuff? Because that would be, because they can't, not going to do it with money. That could be the one competitive advantage, if it works, that they would have over the rest of the league and a way for them to stay competitive consistently.
Yeah, it'd be pretty awesome if they were just playing possum this entire time, kind of trashing analytics while they're building up this amazing database for it.
Hey, but it would be smart for them to do that, to just do a complete 180 and just go all in on it.
Well, I think every team should, in theory, kind of at least, whether, you know, all in is kind of a relative thing. But, I mean, the fact that they're, like, going out of their way to disparage it and kind of make light of it and whatnot is just comical to me because of where they are right now as an organization as a whole.
I got two more for you, sir.
Yeah,
and the first is, do you have any I'm writing about this later probably, and it's sort of been bubbling under the surface a bit, but do you have any comment or observation on the whole SAP NHL.com advanced stats thing versus apparently reality?
Well, I don't know. Have you read Yost's column on it?
I read Yost's thing.
No, Yost is the guy to talk about this with for sure. But, no, it's kind of funny that what was it, two summers ago, I guess, now, where they kind of were embracing the analytics, but instead of going with advanced stats, they started calling them enhanced stats and doing this shot attempt stat and whatnot. And yeah, all of their numbers are out of whack. And while there's definitely a little wiggle room amongst all the other kind of tracking websites, theirs are just so off that it makes you wonder whether they're just like totally kind of picking numbers out of a hat and attributing them to teams, because there doesn't seem to be any sort of basis behind them.
Yeah, and I feel personally responsible for it because I was in the room when they gave, you know, me and Nick Kostanicko the big dog and pony presentation of everything they had planned for like the next 2 years, and I'm the one who wrote down the fact that they had the magic prediction box that you know, could accurately predict the playoffs within like 95% or that, whatever the hell number they threw out there.
Yeah.
And I think that was the thread where people pulled it, and all of a sudden the sweater unraveled, in the sense that maybe these guys are there's a little bit of snake oil involved in what they pitched the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a shame because, I mean, it's the NHL's official site. Like, they should be kind of at least doing a respectable job in this regard. They don't have to be, you know, the forefront leaders by any means, but there's so many casual fans that kind of want to learn about this stuff and may not know where to go. So they just go to NHL.com and look at this stuff, and then they're kind of, you know, misguided in their attempt to kind of better understand the game and learn about analytics. And that's really kind of the disappointing part for me.
Yeah, there were two sort of areas where they could really, you know, dominate and capture a segment of the hockey crowd. One is the analytics, which is, you and Travis have mentioned countless times, has been a complete hash. And the other is to do, and I know why they don't, because then all the teams are on board with it and you need all 30 for it to happen. They could really corner the market on CapGeek, General Fanager, because they have all of the info to the, you know, final dotted I and the cross T. And they seem to kind of be missing on that one. But I get why that, because you're not going to get all 30 teams in line with that at this point anyhow. Last one for me, Dimitri. Who do you like? It's a simple question. I mean, we can talk about the Avs and, you know, tear down the Detroit Red Wings under Blashill, but who do you like out there?
I don't like anyone. Analytics just hate people, so I
that's not true at all.
I don't know. I think a team that I really like that, and Jeff, you and I talked about this on when you came on the Hockey Pediocast, but the Wild are a team who I just like really enjoy watching, and I'm not sure whether the public belief has kind of shifted yet, because for a while there they were considered this like super bland team that played these defensive slow games that was very little event, but they're like one of the funnest teams to watch just purely based on how fast they play and the skill they have on that team. So I think they're like the one team that I like a lot, that more than I'd say just people generally do.
Are you with me on the Minnesota-Winnipeg matchup as being the great rivalry yet to come in the NHL?
Oh, absolutely. I think Winnipeg, anyone, is a great matchup just because they have so much potential for it to be a complete mess, right? Like you saw that game on Saturday against the Preds.
Seven Cobb.
They went down early, and then in the final 15 minutes or so, I was legitimately wondering whether they'd have to like kind of just like blow the game dead because so many guys were taking penalties. And basically, there was like a scrum after every single play, and I was just wondering whether it could even realistically finish. So the Jets are a fun in that regard.
And Dubnyk's got a 922 even strength save percentage right now, which is not better than I thought it would be, to be honest.
Yeah, he's played better recently. He got out to a rough start, and then everyone was kind of burying him and saying that. And, you know, that contract still very well may wind up looking like a bad deal in a few years. But for now, he's kind of he's the type of guy where they can just kind of send him out there pretty much every night. And he's not costing them too many games. So that's all you can really ask for their goalie in that regard.
Oh, so he's Antiniemi. So
how you feel about Antiniemi. What do you think about his job in Dallas so far?
Oh no, I Merrick's the Niemi hater. Like
I'm not a Niemi guy.
Yeah, I'm a Niemi guy in the sense that like you just said, like it's going to McDonald's. Like no matter what McDonald's you go to in the world, you know what you're getting out of it. It ain't gonna necessarily be a gourmet meal, but it's probably not gonna taste like dog shit either. And you can't say the same thing about Burger King.
The one thing I will say about Niemi, outside of Jonathan Quick, he may be the quickest at getting the pucks down low. That's the one place where I'll always give it up for Antiniemi.
Right.
Last one for me, and I get the sense in reading you and following you that you do like the 3-on-3, but you can clarify that if you want. Is there ever going to be a way to study this thing analytically? Like, is 3-on-3 going to be something that we can ever quantify as far as teams that are successful at it or not successful at it, or is it just such a fire wagon, crapshoot, one bad bounce, you know, freak show that you'll never be able to really quantify it?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think eventually we're going to kind of have enough of a sample size to know whether, like, what works in it and what doesn't. Obviously, it's kind of yet to be ironed out, and there's going to be a lot of adjustments by coaches, especially on the way to defend it in the coming weeks and months. So that'll be an interesting thing to follow. But yeah, no, is there anyone that doesn't like 3-on-3 except for maybe, I guess, goalies? Because I pretty much just, you know, watch hockey at this point just to watch 3-on-3. I think the only account I need to follow on Twitter is that 3-on-3 overtime alert account or whatnot.
Alert count.
Yeah, which just tells you when a game's going to 3-on-3 and just tune into that, because that's like easily the funnest part of the hockey game right now.
Here's what I wonder about 3-on-3, and we're starting to see this now a little bit. I wonder what happens when players finally figure out their distancing on 3-on-3. Because right away, initially out of the gate, it's, hey, fire wagon hockey. Oh, man, it's a shot that goes past the net. And all of a sudden, we got a 2-on-1 going the other way. Woohoo! Like, it seems to me right now what players are trying to do is find out, okay, where's the sweet spot where I can forecheck but not too deep? Where's my distancing on this one? How can I still figure out a way to play it safe but still try to score goals? And I don't think we're even close to being there yet.
Yeah, I think it'll eventually happen. I mean, so much time and effort is put in by coaches to kind of figure this stuff out. And eventually I think it's going to stop being as fun just because teams are going to take a more conservative approach once they figure out what works and what doesn't. But yeah, for now, it's kind of just like a feeling out process, and everyone is just going for the jugular. So it makes it for a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, except for Ottawa. No, it's I think it's to answer your question, by the way, Dave Lozo hates it. He cool. I don't know if that's just his just general comportment in life or if he
like
just
anything,
doesn't
though?
He likes backwards hats, I think,
and
is the only thing
Eli
I can
Manning,
really.
I think.
Yeah, he backwards hats and Eli Manning would be about it. And if you ever see Eli Manning in a backwards hat, well, you might need a mop afterwards, is all I'm going to say. anyways, yeah, there you go. There
all right.
You go, so.
All right. We got to the bottom of that. Good.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that one alone.
All right. Dimitri, thanks, pal. Continued success with the PDO cast for people that may not have tuned into it yet. A, what's your problem? And B, where can they find it and how often?
We're doing it like 3 or 4 times a week. So it's on iTunes, SoundCloud. You guys can go to hockeypdocast.com and we post them all there. And I know you guys were trying to figure out where I write. And I'm kind of like a blogging nomad of sorts. I kind of just write all over the place. So I wind up kind of reposting all of my links up there on hockeypdocast.com as well. So if you guys want to read my written work, you can check it out there. But, yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun, and we're about, well, I guess, what, 20 episodes or so in, and
awesome.
The feedback's been amazing. So, yeah, if either of you guys want to come on at any point, the door's open. Come on in, and let's get a podcast rivalry going here.
Let's do it, man.
Stop with that podcast rivalry. You know, everybody's trying to always set up some rivalry with us. Like, I remember the Puck podcast people were trying to get us into a rivalry with them. I'm like, why would we want to be in a rivalry with them? We are so much superior. Than they are.
When did that happen? Did I miss that?
This was a few years ago. Like there was
really?
Like a thing where like some of their listeners were trying to goad us into some sort of rivalry with them. They're fine. Well, everybody's fine. Who gives a shit?
I was kind of dubious what your guys' intentions were when you invited me on this show. I don't know if you guys were kind of just gonna reel me in here and take care of me, but no, it's been a lot of fun. So thanks for having me.
No, we only have one rivalry, and it's with that podcast that Tally and Katie did. Because they basically stopped doing it, I think.
Stop, which is a drag. It's too
so
bad.
We won that radio war. We won that war.
Yeah, but it sucks. It was fun to be taken down a peg by those two. It's too bad.
No, the PDO cast is great, and Merrick came on. I'll have to come on soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're great, and we're super happy to have you on the show, because you made us smarter. Yeah.
Cool, guys. Well, thanks a lot. I'm free anytime you guys want to talk.
There you go.
All right. We'll get you back on. Thanks, Dimitri.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
There he is, Dimitri Filipovich from the PDO cast.
What we could do is, if he's available all the time, we can like basically like steal Dimitri, and then Yost will have to do that podcast on his own, and then we can like
just be Yost on an island.
Just squash it like the cockroach that it is at our feet.
We'll just separate. We'll just that's the key is we'll just separate the two.
That's right, divide and conquer. That's so funny.
Yeah,
I used to listen to the show. All my Caps friends will be in on this for a second. I used to listen to a show called Don and Mike in DC. Which was a huge radio show for a while, and was nationally syndicated. And whenever people would callers would call in to like argue with people, they would always like be like, "Well, you know, I think Don's such an idiot, but Mike, you're really good." And it was called Divide and Conquer. And I don't think people really divide and conquer with us. I think most people that don't like what we say just assign it to both of us. And it might be because for some reason people still think our voices sound the same. I still don't understand that personally.
Yours is deeper. Mine's more nasally. We've established that.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think people out there think you're the one that does the impressions?
I've never heard that. Have you heard that? I think it's been really widely established that you bring the ha-ha, and I bring the, Detroit Red Wings power play 1952.
I've put out what I felt was my top 10 impressions list over the weekend. Or maybe it was on Friday, and I was really happy to see many. It's now staggering to me how many of them I do and how many of them I forget about. Like I put out this list, they're like, where's Jarmo Kekalainen? And I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I do Jarmo. They're like, where's XYZ? I'm like, oh shit.
But your Jarmo Kekalainen is essentially just a Swedish chef from the Muppets.
My Jarmo Kekalainen is essentially Ilya Bryzgalov, but more focused on player personnel. I mean, it's like again, I only do like 9 actual impressions of people.
I'm glad we got to the New Jersey Devils on the podcast with Dimitri because I was going to open that today. Am I allowed to say that I'm enjoying watching the Devils play? Because honestly, I am. I don't know if it's going to last. I don't know how long I'm going to be saying this, but right now I'm having fun watching the New Jersey Devils.
Right. Well, it's that awkward transition from what you expect them to be to what they actually are. And I mean, I think that the Wild are a team that actually had to go through that too. When after like, they got the slow and boring thing for years after Lemaire left, right? And it's like, no, not that team anymore. Look, they've got players that skate and they score. But look, I mean, Camilleri, point per game. Kyle Palmieri, 14 points and 17. Stempniak, 14 and 17. Henrique, 14 and 17. I didn't see that shit coming. 6 goals for Travis Zajac, who should be a Leaf by now.
That's a big one. That was a big one for me, because I thought that was like, ooh, shady side of the mountain, going to be left on the scrap heap. And who knows? This may all fall apart. Who knows? Right now, I'm just enjoying watching it. All right, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I enjoy watching the New Jersey Devils this year. There, I said it.
But what's amazing is that, again, like, if you watch this Hines team, and I heard about him when he came to Jersey and how they were going to be a bit more offensive. It's very – you watch the Penguins, and they're trying to make something work with something they don't have, which is mobile puck-possessing defense. And Rob Scuderi is right now second on that team in scoring amongst their D. The Devils, their top 5 scorers are all forwards. Their 6th scorer is Severson with 7 points. Mm-hmm. And then you got to go all the way down to Andy Green with 3 points to find another defenseman that's – you know, Green and Jelena both have 3, and Larson has 3. That's a lot of points up front with nothing coming back from your back end, really.
What was always the magic number? If your blue line, what was it? Your goalie needs to be .915 save percentage, and your blue line needs to give you, is it 125 points? And if you can get 120, is it 125 from your back end, you can make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's one of the sort of NHL rules of thumb. If you get that kind of production from your back end, you go into the playoffs. Same as 915 for goaltending.
I have to double check something here. Hold on one second.
What's that?
Here.
What are you doing?
This can't be right. No, this is right. I'm gonna read you a list of names. You tell me what they all have in common.
This will be fascinating. Greg reads a board.
John Klingberg, Patrice Bergeron, Patrick Kane, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, David Krejci, Andre Markov, and Ryan Johansson. What do all those players have in common? I'll just tell you, so you're not straining.
Okay, go ahead.
All of those players are the ones that are ahead of or tied with Kyle Palmieri in power play points. Power play points this season. A devil. And he's got 8. He's got as many power play points as Jamie Benn. What the hell is happening in this league?
You know what? This is a league of pairs, right? And Zajac and Palmieri are playing great together.
That's
crazy. Is no longer really a league of lines. It's a league of pairs.
Justin Falk has 6 power play goals.
Yep,
tied for the league lead. I might have to do our little numbers thing that we do. Stunning numbers on the blog, because I need to catch up on some of these stats. I haven't really looked inside the numbers too much this season yet.
Get on it.
I should
get on that.
Nathan MacKinnon and Patrick Kane each have 4 game winning goals. It's very interesting.
Hmm. Hey, what do you think of the idea of the Avs going all in on analytics and becoming the Oakland A's?
I think that'd be terrific. I mean, it would try to maybe help what's going on now. They're just so poorly coached, it makes you mental. And you know what?
How do you fire the legend?
You can't. Here's what's going to happen.
Quebec's going to get an expansion team, and he's going to leave with Julien Brisebois of Tampa.
They're gonna miss the playoffs. I'll predict it right now. They're gonna miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
And both Sakic and Wah are going to leave on their own accord. Sakic will leave first. Patrick will say, "I am here because of my friend," and then he will leave too.
So then they go heavy analytics then.
And then they'll have to. It's a very odd situation that they're going to be in, because, like, ostensibly those two guys came in as we're getting the band back together. You know, Hogan returning to WWE, sort of, you know, trying to get the fans engaged and back again. And what's happened is it worked for about a year, and now the fans are like, you know, this is great and all, but the team kind of sucks, and maybe we don't need the nostalgia thing anymore. Maybe we
was
just
that
need the good hockey team thing.
Was that 100-point year the worst thing that could have happened to the Avs? Because now they can't tell, they can't go through the building it up story.
Because
they've already been there.
Right.
They can't go through every year you get 15 points better. Mm-hmm. And hey, all of a sudden the power play is really clicking. And hey, this guy got 35 goals.
But you know what's funny is they do that. They have that season. and everybody's bought into it. I mean, yeah. One might say there's literally a book that says that's titled Wah Saves, chronicling that season.
Yeah.
Everybody bought into that for the most part. I have a feeling, though, like when we see Calgary miss the playoffs this year, and it probably is going to happen, yep. I don't think that people bought in the same way to that team that they bought into the Avalanche.
Oh, dude, I don't know. You really
you think
need to
so?
Move to, you need to move to Canada.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because I look at that Avalanche team under Watt, and people were like, oh, they cracked the effing code. Look at these young guys. These young guns are ready to inherit the mantle and win this cup. And I look at that Calgary team, and everybody was like, at least from the outside looking in, oh, nice, they're ahead of schedule. Now, granted, that perception might have changed when you bring in Hamilton for a leak this summer, but the goaltending was still dog shit. And I still looked at that team as being, this is great that they did that.
But here's the thing that kills me about all of it. You know, this idea that, well, they're just better shooters. Oh, well, they're just shooting from better distances. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that over the course of a long time, if you're getting outshot by 15 to 20 pucks a night, eventually you're going to lose more games than you're going to win. Like,
true.
you don't need to go deep dive analytics on any of that stuff.
Hold
like,
on, let me consult my abacus.
mm-hmm, carry the one.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely true. Yes, that's true.
You don't need to be, you know, Dmitry Filipovich and you know, you don't need to be Tyler Dello to figure that out. I mean, there are other ways that those people can help you, namely when it comes to contract time. But, I mean, that one kind of seemed like an obvious one. Mm-hmm. But, listen, hockey fans, in a lot of ways, and sports fans in general, are still in love with magic. Don't you find?
Yes.
Like, wow, look at that. They're getting, you know, doubled in shots every night, but somehow they win. They're the comeback kids. Look at these third period comebacks. Well, here's the flip side of third period comebacks. Here's what happens when you can't come back.
Look at the fortitude that the Anaheim Ducks showed, winning all of those one-goal games, and then the goals stop. Look at the Anaheim Ducks. They can't score for shit, and they keep losing.
I still think Anaheim wins that, wins the Pacific, by the way.
Oh, I think they'll be fine.
They win the Pacific.
They're going to win the whole thing. They're going to win the cup because I picked them.
Oh, wow.
Woo. That's right. And then we'll all talk about the magic and not firing Bruce Boudreau earlier this season. Mm-hmm. Real quick, Duchesne, Zuccarello, and Reimer, you're very worthy three stars. Duchesne's been absolutely insane since the trade rumors hit. Probably just a coincidence. But then again, he was also slotted with McKinnon, too, recently, which really sparked his game a little bit.
Didn't it start, though, before the trade rumors started to come out about him?
Okay. Two goals with playing with McKinnon, so I think it probably started a little bit, but he's just been insane since then. That goal, that save by Jake Allen was a goal. It was a goal every night of the damn week. That puck was over the line, and I just wish we could all get our act together and get the goddamn sensors inside the puck so we can figure out if the puck's in, because that was a goal.
Okay.
No? Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think it was a goal, too. I know.
All right. And finally, for me at least, Thursday night, 6 to 8, Foley's NYC. Puck Daddy viewing party
right.
of the Rangers at the Lightning, and also a book party for me.
Okay.
I'll be selling. I'll be signing. I hope everybody can come. I will write little wacky things inside the book. I'll be wearing another special hockey jersey as I wore my Whalers jersey to the Toronto event. So everybody do show up. 6 to 8 at Foley's, but obviously we'll be there all night. And I'll be sending out some, you know, a post on Puck Daddy, some Facebook crap to remind you about it. But I hope to see everybody out there. Leahy's going to be there.
Okay.
Mark Fischel, formerly of the NHL, is going to be there. And of course, it's also the site of the infamous Tim Peel incident. And I thought that you would have said by now how proud of me that you are that I didn't make a big deal of his 1,000th game over the weekend.
I think you should have sent out a congratulations tweet. That would have been a classy thing to do.
I think I might have said something along the lines of like congratulations on inexplicably making it to 1,000 games, which I guess I mean under a certain light
stay classy.
Is snarky,
stay classy in any light that's pretty snarky. Hey, this one first of all, say hi to Mark for me. He's a wonderful guy. And two, can you ask Sean Leahy? Actually, forget. I'll just ask Sean Leahy myself. Sean, you're listening right now. Can you play the role of Jeff Merrick at the book signing for Greg Wyshynski and make sure that you get a chance to sign Greg's book as well? And just put on full snark and full insult.
Here,
as much as he can, like, really deface the book.
I'll answer for Leahy.
I don't use pens.
I don't use pens.
Just assume that's the answer.
I don't use. What the hell does that mean?
I have no idea. But you wanted an answer from Sean Leahy, and I gave you an answer.
Yeah.
That's impression number 21, Sean Leahy.
You do,
and he always
Sean
says,
Leahy.
And I know he'll listen to this, so inevitably he'll go be like, "I don't ever talk like that." And then I'm like, "Yeah, you do. You sound just like it." He's like, "Fine. By the way, you didn't bring any trail mix, and the temperature in the room is at 45 degrees Fahrenheit."
Sean, please play the role of Merrick and deface the book as much as you can. And good luck on Thursday. Listen, dude, have fun. Those things are fun. You want to give us a hint as to what jersey you're right? Will it be Cleveland Barons, Kansas City Scouts, California Seals? We have an old school kind of.
I will say this right now.
Pittsburgh Hornets.
The jersey that I am wearing.
Philadelphia Quakers.
On Thursday night is
Hamilton
jersey.
Tigers.
The jersey I'm wearing Thursday night is a jersey that I have never worn before outside this apartment.
I was going to say, in public, or you've never put it over your shoulders?
I know it fits. I ain't going to put on some jersey and have my belly hanging out or some shit.
Oh, wait. Is this the jersey you wear when it's sexy time? Okay.
It's not the one with the sleeves cut off so she can see my biceps. By the way, the hockey jersey with the sleeves cut off is, of course, the South Jersey. Jersey.
Nice.
That way your sleeves don't get caught when you're working on your Mustang engine and
girls
eating eating a pork roll while
girls
watching
for
the
girls,
Eagles.
Baby. Well, someone jams Decca de Rablin into your shoulder at the same time, too. Gotta get jacked, bro.
Get jacked.
Just a little bit of Decca for the weekend, bro.
Yeah. What are you doing tonight? I'm heading out to the shore. Gonna see a show. Anyways, I'm wearing a jersey I've never worn outside the house before, and I think you'll all like it. As people at the Toronto show know now, I don't hold the pen correctly. I never learned how. All the little plastic hoodads that you put on pens and pencils to teach a child how to use it, I chewed them. I chewed them as a kid, which A, is the reason I don't hold the pen correctly. B is probably the reason why I am how I am with the amount of Chinese-produced toxins and chemicals that course through my body on any given day thanks to all the little plastic hoodads I chewed as a kid.
Do you have bad teeth, too? Does that lead to bad teeth?
No, that's hereditary. I'll tell you that right now. But I'll say that the problem is that since I don't hold the pen correctly, I wound up getting, like a gallon of ink on the sleeve of my Whalers jersey, which is, again, battle, you know, damage, whatever, wear and tear, but I hope not to soil this one because it's a nice new jersey. I think you'll all like it.
Oh, nice. I look forward to all the pictures.
Karen Douglas says, that's not how Sean Leahy sounds, bad impression. Well, you're wrong. And once again, as I wrote in your book, when you're wrong, it hurts me on a basic human level. All right, everybody.
Sorry, I've just stopped listening. I'm just sending emails right now to conclude the show.
Oh, good. No. Thanks to Dmitry Filipovich, and thanks to Merrick, and thanks to producer Sam. And we'll be back with the show tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
Woo! Bye, everybody. Woo!